Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Luke Hunt and this is another podcast for the Beyond the Mekong series, which is broadcast by The Diplomat. And with me today from Mae Sot in Thailand is Paul Greening. Paul is making a return to the program. We're going to talk about what's happening in Myanmar. Elections are scheduled for December 28th. And Thailand, well, it's in a bit of a mess. Paul, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Luke. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and listen to your dulcet tone.
Thanks, mate. Actually, we've recorded a few over the last couple of years and they've done very well, I'll quickly add. Now, Myanmar, the elections have been called for December 28. They seem to defy common sense. The junta, I think, in the best calculation, has absolute control over 30% of the country, although I think your numbers are a lot less than that. Ask the obvious question, how do you think they'll go?
Okay, this is interesting because I think we can learn a lot about the present elections from previous elections
right. In
Myanmar. In fact, the history of elections in Myanmar, there have been 17 general elections since 1922 in Myanmar, then Burma, of course. And there's running themes in a lot of them. Which I can go through very quickly, just spend more time. Now that part 2000 and on 2015 and 2020 election, the others I can go through quickly to show it's a running theme.
Yep.
Like one theme is there, many of them are one party elections. Many had coups when they didn't like the elections. Those changes the names of the political party, especially the military one, with quite strange names, Peace and Democracy, and goodness knows what. There's always been Chinese support. To different degrees, it's at a much stronger degree at the moment. Also, there's a trend of the military not recognizing results if they don't happen to like them. And also elections run over a series of months because of conflict in some areas, which has actually reduced the voting turnout. In fact, one election is only 20%. And then you have dictators coming to power and basically destroying the economy after taking power. And also you have, of course, the military-written constitutions, which they write in their favour, and they tie everything up pretty tightly, so whoever wins, they still have the ultimate control. And also you have names of parties that are totally contrary to the actual party, what it does. This is the case of, I think it's an old saying that you can paint a donkey with white stripes and call it a zebra, but it's still a donkey. It's still the military, whatever they call themselves, Peace and Democracy and your development, whatever, all bullshit.
Yep.
Basically still with monkey. Now you had the elections in 1947 and then the anti-fascist People's Freedom Party won 88% and they continued to win after that. And then you had elections in 1951 over a number of months because of internal conflicts, and 1956 continued over conflicts. It could be a few months, so that trend carried on, just like the elections coming up are going to be December and January.
Right.
At least.
Right.
But that's right. Then in 1958, General Ne Win, and that's very significant time.
Sure.
So basically there was the elections, 1958, and Ne Win didn't really like them too much. So in 1960, he took over. And then 1962, he fully overthrew the democratically elected government in a coup. And for the next 26 years, basically, we had authoritarian dictatorship in the country. His party was called the Burma Socialist Spoken Party. And we know other parties, such as in Germany, have been called socialist and are part in socialist.
Right.
It is in the same ilk as the total authoritarian, total control, run the country down. Stupid superstition about numbers on banknotes, the goodness knows what,
yep.
And the people suffered like hell. Then you had in 1973 constitution, and the 1973 constitution, it made the country a one-party state, which was the Burma Socialist Program Party under Ne Win. They were the sole legal party for the country. But that didn't stop them having elections. In fact, it was better to have elections then. So in 1974, you had a general election. And big surprise, the Burma Socialist Program Party won all 451 seats.
Right.
And they devoted to general elections in 1978, 1981, 1985, all under the same constitution where there was only one party. And funnily enough, they won with 90% or more of the votes in every one of those elections. 90% or more. This reminds me a bit of Suharto in Indonesia when I was there, where some overzealous crony or local official would actually have 110% vote in favour of Suharto. So it's just a lot of rubbish. Then a very, very important time, and still we have ripples of that and effect of that now, is the 1988 MAC protest. MAC pro-democracy protest. Very important. A lot of people from the 1988 time, they are still involved in politics. They're still activists, and they're still basically taking some lead and supporting the revolution now. The very important time. Of course, it was quelled. A lot of blood, over 3,000 people killed. But it did actually bring some change.
Mm-hmm.
It meant you had in 1990, as a result of this, of the 1988 generation MAC protest, although it was put down, you then had, in a very bloody way and savage way, brutal way, you then elect the 1990 Myanmar general election. This was the first multi-party election since 1960.
Right.
I counted about 85 parties contested it. NLD won over 60% of the votes.
Yep.
But, of course, this was not very popular with the military. I don't know who they thought were going to win. Maybe they're a bit naive. But they refused to accept and acknowledge results. So it never convened. It was taken over by the military, and Aung San Suu Kyi was put under house arrest then. So basically they nullified it because they just, this was the same trend. You know, they didn't like the result. They had elections, not what they wanted. So they got rid of them and ignored them. Then you had, interesting, another change of names. At that time, the military government was called SLORC.
SLORC.
Yeah. And that then changed its name to the State Peace and Development Council. There's no peace and there's no development, of course. You know, another ridiculous thought change, which meant nothing.
Yeah.
2008 constitution, that was very significant, because that's what they're still basing the elections on now. That happened 10th of May 2008. That was the same year as you had Cyclone Nargis in Myanmar, with about 140,000 deaths.
Yeah, and Nargis.
While the country was, So while the country was still reeling under, you know, the suffering and trying to get itself back together after Nargis, of course, the military refused any international aid for a week, causing a large increase in deaths and suffering. Then they had the constitution, where people weren't exactly thinking of the constitution. So you had the referendum on the constitution, which, what a big surprise. The constitution was then passed. And the constitution, of course, gave the military ultimate control. 25% seat in parliament. They control some of the main ministries, defense, border, and internal ministries. They support that. They control that. They control the budget. And they have ultimate control if they don't like what's happening. So they put all these control, all these mechanisms in place in the constitution to mean whatever happened, they still had ultimate control. Now, about 2 years later, in 2010, you had elections again. You had general elections. Now, the NLD boycotted these elections because conditions weren't met and they're obviously going to be a bit of a joke. So they actually decided to boycott them. They were cancelled in some places, like in part the Monte, because of ongoing conflict. They were held under very tight security. The election commission was in the military's pocket, and turnout in the country is possibly as low as 20% in some areas. The Guardian newspaper reported widespread vote intimidation and bribery. And of course, the Union Solidarity and Development Party, military party, won 80% of the seat. I'm thinking maybe the junta wants to replicate the 2010 elections in the 2025 elections. That seems to be the way it's going. No NLD involved. They'd be banned from it. And very, very tight control. They're trying to do it in many places where they actually haven't got control of the country. And there'll be very low turnout. But they will still say that they then won 80%. I should bet more.
Are they that delusional, though? Yeah. Are they really that delusional? I mean, they're obviously calling this election because they want legitimacy. But I'm struggling to see how anybody can recognize these elections.
Well, people will recognize these elections just like in 2010. I think the reactions will be quite similar.
Yeah.
Because it's in their interest. As they say in politics, there's no principles, but their interests. There's interest, but no principle. Now, that's true. China takes it even further to there's no morality, there's no human dignity, there's no actual basic empathy, there's nothing except economic and strategic and power interests. In the 2010 election, China, foreign minister, said that those elections, complete joke of election, this is a quote, a critical step for Myanmar in implementing the seven-step roadmap to democracy in the transition to an elected government, and this thus is welcome. Seven-step road to democracy with another sort of military plan. They all have these steps to democracy, to nowhere, to this good luck. It's all a facade. So China supported it. And I expect these coming elections, they will support it well. Well, they are supporting it. Russia welcomed the vote and categorized it as a step forward in the democratization of Burmese society. So they support it again. Again, I think in the next elections, Russia and China will take the same line. I'm not sure they use exactly the same word. They might as well, I think. America, I think, would be different. At that time, you had Barack Obama. And he said it is unacceptable to steal an election as the regime in Burma has done again for the world to see. I'm not sure what Trump will say. Goodness knows what Trump will say. He'll probably say something about Biden and Hillary Clinton. Yeah, you're right. Accept or, yeah. Yeah, he's going to ramble. So I don't know what he's going to say, but it's certainly not going to be anything like Barack Obama. The Philippines said it was the farce like elections, which appeared to be a display, which is, of course, true. Now, what will Atim say the next time? I'm not too sure. Maybe not too strong as that. I suspect not. Then you had a time which was interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that's the time they might want to glean. You had the Tencent government that came in after that in 2011. That was quite popular. He's a military bureaucrat, appointed president. But he's quite popular because he has some reforms and he had encouraged foreign investment and made it easier for foreign investment.
Mm-hmm.
And he did many countries.
Yeah.
Sorry, Luke, go on.
I was going to say, and he did sow the seeds for the 10 years of the democracy that did exist before the coup.
Yes, yes, I agree. And many countries, because of these reforms and because they had the chance of foreign investment, started ignoring the dubious elections and embraced the new government. I'm afraid this might be what they hope to happen again. They'll have China supporting it, Russia automatically supporting it. America, goodness knows where Trump's going to be on it. If he can find on the map, Thailand is going to go along with it, step in the right direction, all that rubbish. Methodafian, I think, will just be happy that they think there'll be some law and order, less conflict, and they can carry on with business.
Right, but I don't understand how anyone can think that. I mean, come on, it's, we've been talking about this conflict for a long time now, since the 2021 coup, and one of the interesting things about this civil war is that previously with all the conflicts, there was always this mantra that the military, the Burma, have a special place in Myanmar society. And that's been completely blown out of the water by the current conflict. And to my mind, we're looking at a military who, for whatever the justifications that's in their head when they sit down for a cabinet meeting, seems to be saying that this is going to legitimize their rule over all of Myanmar. And pretty much all of Myanmar is fighting them, and it's bloody and it's horrible. And I'm just beside myself a tad because I don't understand their thinking on this. And I hope I'm not sounding too helpless, but...
So I agree with you, Luke, but you look back, as I mentioned, 2010, they had 20%, as low as 20% turnout in some areas.
Yep.
And they still claimed total victory, and countries, because of their own interests, went along with it. And I'm afraid that ASEAN would say, all they want is peace and quiet. And a lot of ASEAN countries are not exactly democratic anyway. So peace and quiet, no hassle, no refugees coming across the border. Let's carry on with business. And hopefully that they want some stability, and that's it. And forget democracy, forget the people trust, things like that, as long as it seems to be in their interest.
Right. How is the fighting going? Because we've been hearing a lot of stories out of your neck of the woods. I haven't been up to MASOP for a few months, but the EAOs, the ethnic armed organizations, they've made great gains over the previous 2 years, I guess. And the military seems to be on the counter-offensive now and trying to retake that lost ground ahead of the December 28 election. How are they faring?
It's mixed. It's mixed depending on which EROs and which area we're looking at. The military are putting a lot of soldiers, a lot of manpower, a lot of resources into gaining as much as they can before the election.
Right.
They're not taking townships, they're taking some villages, but mostly they're trying to retake towns which they lost. So they're putting a lot of soldiers on the ground, extending themselves to a great extent. China is helping an awful lot with its sophisticated drones.
Yep.
Before the resistance, especially PDF developed drones from Farmer's Drone and had the upper hand as far as drones are concerned, that has been flipped. The Hunter realized it was a great idea, and now they've got sophisticated drones from Russia, but mostly from China. In fact, the Chinese are actually manning them, apparently, in Tropio in Arakan to protect that so-called to protect their assets.
Right, the oil and gas hotline.
So,
yep.
So you've got that. But in Arakan, basically, you've got Shitwe and Tropio for AA to take. They're the main things to take. They're not taking them at the moment because Shitwe would be a bloodbath, and the military has made sure that's the case by bringing villagers in and making, you know, human shields of them, etc. And also, it might affect some of the assets and interests of India, and they don't really want to upset India. Tokyo, that's even more a case. They don't want to destroy, kill any Chinese if private security companies, which are basically Chinese military, of course, so they don't have much of the private in China.
Yep.
But you know, they don't want to kill them. They don't want to hit gas pipelines there or refineries or anything like that that could upset China. So they're being quite careful with Tropio as well. Those, I think they're putting siege. They're surrounding it and they're sieging it. You've had the Hunter that said with Arakan they want to retake 5 towns. Basically, I think that's impossible. They're not going to do that. But there's going to be very, very heavy airstrikes. But the people, I just talked to someone yesterday who's in Central Arakan. They're scared because they know there's going to be really heavy airstrikes coming. They're going to bomb the hell out of villages, which is what they do anyway, to cause, you know, mass evacuation and panic. They've come up the river, with Navy boats, supplied by China often, and they're bombing every village along the way. So you're going to have some very heavy fighting, a lot of suffering. They're not going to, in Arakan, they're not going to retake the major towns that they hope to take, or they say they'll take. That is in the west. In the east, in the Kereni area and Keren area, again, the Hunts is not doing too well. In Keren area, the KNLA, the Keren National Liberation Army Alliance, that means good PDF, especially Cobra Column PDF, have been doing pretty well. They've taken a lot of camps along the border. It's about time China started working with them. They've known them for years.
Yep.
Yeah, they think that Keren have been there forever, but they're not. And they basically got border. I think they're still fighting in Mesot area, down in Wale, Wale on the border. But that looks like they're going to be taking that soon. So they're going to be controlling all the border. Also, the Kereni are doing pretty well. They've had a setback. The Mosso were taken, again, the town, main town, not the township, by the military, putting a lot of resources in there. But they are still controlling most of the border. So the east and the west is pretty well controlled. The Kachin, the KIA, Kachin Independent Army, is doing pretty well in the north. But then if you look at the Shan groups, you know, some of them have been fighting amongst each other. Some, I'm sure, in the Peekstum mentality. The TNLA is not doing too well. The Kokang, MNDNA, has had a lot of pressure. We know they gave over Lashio back to the military a while ago, but they're having a lot of pressure now. And the WA, interestingly, have had a lot of pressure from the military now, a lot of pressure. And no, from military, but also from China, especially from China.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next on that, yeah.
Yeah, China has actually cut billions of dollars from the WA. They told them not to be involved in the fight and not to support any of the EROs because they have been supporting them. They said, no, you don't, otherwise we cut it big. And the WA, very reluctantly, have agreed to that. So they're putting pressure on, they're bribing and using pressure, China is, and so is the military, to try and bring EROs into control or keep them quiet and keep them out of it to give them a better chance of gaining more territory leading up to the elections.
Right. And of course, we're talking about the many and different ethnic armed organizations, which Paul refers to as the ethnic rebel organizations, also known as the EROs, EAOs. My God, there's a few names out there for them. It does get complicated. Okay, and later on Friday in Bangkok, we've got the Constitutional Court will deliver its verdict on suspended Prime Minister Pantagon Shinawatra and whether or not she has to stand down. Is this going to have much of an impact on relations with the military and the border? It's quite complicated in Thailand at the moment over who's actually in charge. And there's been accusations that the military has been running its own race when it comes to the border conflict with Cambodia. So I'm just wondering how Thailand is stacking up in regards to Myanmar at the moment and with the elections coming up, as the attitudes seem to have shifted, although I'm not entirely sure in which direction, over the past 12 months. And of course, there was also the crackdown on the criminal syndicates operating the scam compounds and the human trafficking networks.
Yeah, of course, it will have an effect. There's a great deal of instability in Thailand at the moment. People are speculating it could be a coup any time, but they don't really know. Thaksin Shinawatra, father, got off on all charges. Oh, well, he got off on charges. There's probably a few other charges as well, but it looks pretty positive for him, which is very interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I was surprised that he was, just for the audience sake, Thaksin Shinawatra, Pantagon's father, was found not guilty of lèse-majeste charges in a Bangkok court last Friday. I think many people were surprised by that verdict.
Yeah, but if you analyze it, for the old guard, the military, the bigger threat is the Move Forward Party, for the People's Party now, as it's called. It's been thrown out and reformed many times.
And they're also very popular.
That is the bigger threat.
Right.
Yeah, if there's election, they will win. Hands down, they'll probably win a landslide. And the military, that's the last thing the military want. They might not like Pattai, which is Sinawat's party, but Pattai has made allegiances with the military party. So Pattai is a safer option for the military. It stops the People's Party getting into power. If they can both split it up and they still have a reasonable amount of control, that is the better option, I think, the military. Because as you said, under lèse-majeste law, almost no one, you can less than 10%, a fraction, and actually are not guilty. This is quite unusual. But I think it's because of pressure. I think the monarchy plus the military realize it's in their interest to have Pattai there as opposed to the Move Forward Party. And they don't get on too well with the People's Party. So they don't get on too well, People's Party. So this is pretty good. You've got them dividing, and you've got the military that can still have a great deal of control. So I think that's in their interest. Now, it's going to be interesting this Friday, what happened. I wasn't sure if she was going to resign before that. I don't think she is now. Now, will they find her innocent or guilty? I don't know. If they find her guilty, there's no more, sisters and daughters in Kalpan Phoenix.
Not that I'm aware of, but you never quite know where one might come out. One might emerge from the woodwork, but yeah.
That's what I'm wondering as well. But you have got a nondescript, not the well-known, the acting prime minister. And that might suit Penelope as well if they had him in power. The military had gained a lot of backing. Apparently for a prime minister now, they did a poll some weeks ago, and the most popular was Prayut, the last military leader after a coup in Thailand. He got 32% of the vote. The Pattai person got 10%. This is all because of, and there's very speculations of conspiracy theories there, it's all to do with Cambodia and the border and end of Paul.
Yeah, Lieutenant General Bunsin Padklan, who's in charge of the Second Army area up there on the border near the Emerald Triangle, he's come from nowhere. He had a life of obscurity, and he retires on September 30. And all of a sudden, he's been pushed into the national limelight. And there is some speculation that he might decide on a future in politics as well.
He might. I can't see him really as going for prime minister. But the military, interestingly, of course, the PM messed up talking to Hun Sen, calling him uncle and criticizing the military on a phone, put online, Hun Sen recorded and played back, put the tape script everywhere. destroying these friendships. But you had that happening, but the military was not instructed by the civilian government on what to do as far as Cambodia. They took into their own hands. They attacked. They did it themselves, which shows their power. They didn't wait, as most militaries do in a democracy, for the civilian government to tell them what to do. They did it, which I think showed where they are at the moment. The old guard is very much there. Of course, any war, as Margaret Thatcher found with the Balkans, got it back into power, it helps the right wing. It helps nationalism. So now in Thailand, there's a lot of nationalism. This is frightening because it's anti-migrant, of course, this nationalism. In nationalism, usually, it's after against everyone. We're the best. So there's a lot of that now. So people have been quite quiet in the past, especially when you had the People's Party demonstrating, etc. Now they're coming out. So you have all the yellow shirts, you have a lot of the ultra monarchies,
right,
the really extreme right wing coming out. They kill them all, throw them all out, etc. I just read something today about May 4th. There being some fighting of Burmese in the market in May 4th.
Yep. That's unusual. Normally the relations between the Burmese and the Thais up in that part of the world has been pretty good.
But I think this was Burmese against Burmese. I think there's probably some altercation over something, money, whatever. But Thais were saying, throw them all out. We don't want them. You know, what the hell are they doing? They're just causing trouble. Mm. You know, one actually said, wipe them out. Yeah. So you're getting all of this rubbish coming out because of the fighting with Cambodia. I think the fighting helped the extreme right on both sides. Hun Sen wanted to put Mamet in a position to be leader.
Yep.
And the military here in Thailand wanted to actually get more approval and put themselves in a good light and get public support, which, of course, it's been very successfully doing.
Right. And then when you throw me and Mar on top of that equation, I think what we're looking at is an old guard offensive to reestablish, cement their order across Myanmar, Thailand, and Cambodia, which is a huge chunk of Southeast Asia.
And of course, the military, Thai military, and the old generals have had business and relations with the Myanmar military for decades.
Right.
So you have got that. So they feel quite comfortable after the elections, when we're all surprised by the military winning, or the military party winning. I think Thailand will be quite happy, and there'll be statements of it's a step in the right direction. And now there'll be some sort of peace, and we can carry on with business, and et cetera, et cetera. I find it will support you in the future, in your road to democracy. All this crap will come out because it's in their interests, and it's in the interest of China, it's in the interest of Russia as well. So I think we're going to have that. Afyin will probably fall in line because they're pretty weak. Akin's coming over now. I think on 19th of September, they're going over to meet Minong Lang in Naypyidaw to find out what these elections are about and to assess them.
Yeah.
Couldn't it take to assess them? They're completed up to, these sham elections are completed up to far. If you couldn't have to go over and meet a dictator who had attempted a legal coup to actually ask him about the election.
Yeah. They were driving it before.
And also, of course, Western countries later will slowly re-engage because it's in the interest. They can do development work. The UN agencies and other NGOs can have money coming in, and you can have foreign investments. So this is what they hope. And so gradually, after the complaints about unfair elections, etc., gradually they will re-engage. And that is what the military is hoping. Although they know it's complete past, in their interest to re-engage. That is what I'm afraid could happen.
Hardly a positive note to finish up on, but Paul Greening, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Luke. It was an immense pleasure, as always.
All right, mate. Cheers.